Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. I am so excited to introduce you today to our guest who is going to be telling you about a lot of really awesome things that are happening specifically in the month of June. So this is a very timely episode, but also just a generally, it's going to be a very interesting one, a lot of about HIV and AIDS education. So everybody, welcome Juliet Fink, Director of Education at Philadelphia Fight.
Hi, everyone.
So, first of all, I just want to ask, why is June so packed with events?
So, June is AIDS Education Month, and the reason that Philadelphia Fight hosts AIDS Education Month in June every year is because on June 27th, it's National HIV Testing Day, and so we have built a jam-packed month leading up to National HIV Testing Day for the public, the general public in Philadelphia, to really get out information about HIV and make sure that folks finally take a time, maybe this month, maybe even in July, when they actually get tested, because it's still, a lot of people don't know their status, and if you know your status, you can get treated, you can live a long and healthy life, and so the more people who get tested and know, the better everybody is.
I think that's an incredibly important thing to remind people about, because there's a lot of concern that if I take the test, like, it's inevitable anyway, but that's really not the reality anymore, is it?
No, today we have over 30 drug regimens to treat HIV. It's really considered a long-term manageable disease at this point, kind of like diabetes. But the thing is that HIV, the sooner you know your status, if you are HIV positive, and the sooner you get in treatment, the better and more likely that you will have a long and healthy life. So knowing is the first step, and then getting into care with a really good provider is the second step.
Or in the event that you test negative for it, you also can from then on be taking safer sex precautions and other precautions to keep yourself safe, and because it is manageable, but that doesn't mean you need to get it. So
that's right. Prevention, the old school prevention technologies, condoms, are still really the best way to prevent HIV. It's something that, you know, most of us, having grown up at a certain age, you know, we know that that's the way to prevent HIV. It is still 99% effective if you use a condom consistently and correctly. And there's female condoms now, and there's a whole bunch of new stuff that may come on the market in the next couple years that are exciting. Things like microbicides, where it's a little gel, kind of like a spermicide, that you would be able to use. So there's a lot that's happening in that area too. And part of this month is about exposing people, the general public, to all sorts of information about what's going on.
So what out of the entire month are you personally most excited about?
So there's a couple really big events that are going to be really phenomenal. The first event that is actually coming up on Saturday is the Faith Leaders and Community Summit. It is an event really to get folks who are very involved in their church, whether you have a ministry, to really start talking about HIV and AIDS within those communities, because a lot of people really find solace and healing within their faith communities. And so if we can give faith communities the tools to actually know how to refer somebody who may be recently diagnosed with HIV to the right place, or give them the tools to talk about HIV in a sensitive way from the pulpit, then we can reach a lot of people. So that's going to come up this Saturday, June 9th, in the morning from 8:30 to 2 p.m. The other event that's happening very soon on June 14th is the biggest event that we throw, which is the 13th Annual HIV Prevention and Outreach Summit. This is held at the Convention Center every year in sort of the new wing, and we get about 900 to 1,000 people who come out to this summit. It includes, you know, we recommend, it's open to the general public. It's free. You get breakfast and lunch if you want to. And there are over 36 different workshops, from everything about basic HIV 101, if you really don't know anything, to sex positive workshops, to workshops about anal sex, to workshops about the latest treatment that's out there, workshops about some of these new prevention technologies that I talked about, like microbicides. So kind of the latest research that's coming out, along with some really great information about, you know, for specific populations. We have a workshop around sex work and HIV. We have workshops specifically this year around youth, HIV prevention education in the schools, for example. We have workshops that talk about young men who have sex with men, particularly young African-American men who have sex with men, because they are increasingly impacted by HIV and AIDS, more so than the general population. And so it's a really important group of young people that is very vulnerable to HIV. So there's a lot of very, very interesting workshops that are going to be happening on that day. The summit, like I said, is open to the general public, so you don't have to be anybody but somebody who's interested in coming. However, we also have social work and nursing credits that we're going to be providing. So if you are a school social worker, or you are a nurse, or you are interested in how you can work better with the folks that you're serving, it's a great conference to come out to get some more information to bring back to your organization or your community. So that is the 13th Annual HIV Prevention and Outreach Summit, again, held on June 4th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. 14th. Held on June 14th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. It's at 13th and Arch Street from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m.
So before we go to the next major event, because I want that also to just sink in, I want to ask you a little bit. Perhaps you can answer this. Might be some random off the top of your head, but one of the biggest issues I find with HIV prevention is getting people to understand an accurate perception of their risk. And when we talk about people by demographic, like by race or by age group or by who they sleep with, sometimes people think that they're safer than they are, or they think that coming into contact with it is inevitable. Like, what is the reality for people in terms of what is their, how can they accurately assess their risk level?
That's a really, really great question. And before I answer that completely, what I would say is we actually have a blog called the AIDS Librarian blog that answers this question more completely than I will probably be able to answer it, you know, in this interview. So, and there's a lot of links that talk about assessing risk on that blog. But just to answer a little bit, when somebody gets tested, for example, usually I talk to them about spectrum of risk. So, you know, you would have no risk if you weren't having any unprotected sex. You would have no risk if you were not having, if you were not sharing needles, for example, which are the two most common ways that HIV is transmitted. And the third way is if you're pregnant and then you breastfeed, then you have a potential risk of transmitting HIV to the child. That, however, is almost has been wiped out as, you know, a possibility in Philadelphia because we have really good prenatal care for HIV positive women. So very few babies today are born HIV positive from HIV positive women. So when we talk about the spectrum, there's no risk, and then you may go a little bit higher risk where, let's say, you are performing oral sex. And, you know, oral sex, yes, there are instances where we believe that people have contracted HIV from oral sex, particularly though if, for example, your gums bleed or you flossed right beforehand. This is what, you know, blood on blood contact is actually the thing that makes it risky, not the spit or saliva in and of itself. So semen from oral sex getting into your, you know, into your bloodstream, that's what puts you at risk. But it's a very minor risk compared to, for example, the next set of risk, which might be unprotected vaginal intercourse. All right, so unprotected vaginal intercourse is, you know, fairly risky on the spectrum. However, again, HIV has to get into your bloodstream. So what makes it actually really risky is if, for example, you have undiagnosed STDs that may cause lesions or, you know, some sort of bleeding or breakage within the vaginal walls. That's what's actually going to really put you at high risk. So we always tell people, like, to get checked for STDs and STIs regularly if you're not having protected sex. The next sort of highest risk is unprotected anal sex. Anal sex is actually quite risky in that the walls of the anus are very, very thin, so they can be easily broken and penetrated. And so what, you know, when you talk about populations and things like that, you know, there's a lot of people that are having anal sex these days because it feels really good. And so, you know, we're not just talking about gay men. We're talking about everybody's having anal sex. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of people. It's become much more common, including some young people who think that this is a good way to prevent pregnancy. But in fact, it may feel great, but it's actually quite risky if you're having unprotected anal sex. And so typically there are condoms that you can use, and we tell people to use a ton of lube if they're going to have anal sex because it helps to, you know, soften things up and make sure that breakage doesn't happen. And then probably the most risky thing on the spectrum is sharing needles, where it's literally blood-to-blood direct contact into your body. So that is sort of the most risky thing. And that could include things like, you know, at tattoo parties that people have that are not in tattoo parlors. They're sort of unofficial if folks are sharing those needles. Or the most obvious thing that people think about is injection drug users that, you know, may not have access to clean needles, may not know how to clean their needles, or maybe, you know, may not be thinking at that moment because they're looking to get high about sharing those needles. So that's the spectrum of risk is what I say. And I like to talk about it that way because then I can say, well, where are you? Where do you think you fit in on that spectrum? And then we can talk about how to stay safe and how to do some things that will, you know, reduce your risk.
Awesome. So what other events can we look forward to in June?
So a really fun event that we're throwing on June 16th is called Dance for Life Philadelphia Presents Antidote. This is an event that grew out of a couple of our programs run by our youth department, the Youth Health Empowerment Project. So the Youth Health Empowerment Project, also known as YHEP, is the only location in the United States that does this international program called Dance for Life. And Dance for Life was started out of Amsterdam. And it's global. It's a global program that uses dance to inspire young people to take action about HIV. We currently go into the Philadelphia schools and we do a whole assembly and do a whole dance program and then go back into the schools and do sex ed and HIV education with those schools. So this event is a B-boy and B-girl dance battle where we are throwing it at the Old Pine Community Center at 401 Lombard Street from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. What you're going to see there is some amazing breakdancing, and we have 30 crews from the region signed up to participate and battle at this event. And it's, you know, it's meant to really encourage young people to come out and get tested. There are prizes. You can enter, you can get entered into a raffle if you get tested ahead of time at YHEP. Or even that night you can get tested and get entered into the raffle and win, you know, an Xbox 360 and some other really cool prizes. So the goal is really to kind of bring, using dance, to bring prevention messages to young people who aren't getting good sex education in schools. And so we really want to encourage young people, really 13 and up, to come to this event. And if you are a dancer and want to get involved in Dance for Life, you'll be able to sign up and then you could be a dancer with us and go into the schools in the coming year to actually do the sort of exciting dance hype up in the schools with youth. So it's a very, it's a new event. If it goes well, we'll probably do it again, but we have a lot of great momentum going with that event. Another event happening actually the same night as Dance for Life is a gospel celebration of living. Again, we have a lot that we do around faith communities because it's really hard for faith communities to talk about HIV, but it's so important because people go to their faith communities for the kind of healing that they think, you know, is important in a lot of ways when dealing with HIV. So the Gospel Celebration of Living is going to happen at 7 p.m. on June 16th at the Yesha Ministries, which is at 23rd Street and Snyder Avenue. And it's just an amazing gospel concert, and it really is an inspirational evening.
I am just sitting here being like, wow, because this is the one of the first few times that I've been aware of churches getting involved in this particular way. There's, you know, churches often do charity work or for people who are already HIV positive, but this is just so inspiring to me because it's exactly as you said, like a place that people are regularly going, they're seeking community. It's an excellent way to reach out to people who are at risk but may not perceive themselves as belonging to a group that, you know, is at risk. How are people responding to this? Did you run into any difficulty? Were there people that were in opposition to this collaboration?
Well, we haven't. The faith community is really big and really diverse. And so we have for several years been working with some specific churches that we know really want to work on this issue. The vice president of our board, Dr. Reverend Ernest McNear, Bishop Reverend Ernest McNear, he has been a huge leader in this effort in the church, in many churches. And with his guidance, we actually pulled together a Fight Faith Advisory Board made up of church leaders at several different churches. And I think that momentum built. And so we were able to encourage others to become a part of it. And the more it builds and the more we can encourage it, the more likely that people in pastors and churches and reverends can really start to know what to say and talk about. Churches are very important in their communities. They are those spiritual and moral guidance. And, you know, people look to that pastor to really help them figure out a lot of what's going on in life. And so our goal is to really work with as many churches as we can so that we can say, you know, here are some things that you can say. Here are ways that you can talk about HIV that is not stigmatizing, that allows people to feel like they can come to you and get the support that they need. And that's really our primary goal. Will every church in Philadelphia be ready for this message? No, not yet. But, you know, we're trying to build that momentum.
I'm also like, I'm intrigued because I'm looking at the calendar of events right now and I've been waiting like, oh, I'm excited to see about the prison healthcare. That is, oh my God. Cause I'm thinking about it all that I've read about like how that population gets completely forgotten about in a lot of ways, at such great risk for so many reasons. And a lot of people, just are like, well, once you're in that place, we kind of aren't concerned with you, which is not only just like sad because we're not concerned with huge swaths of people, but also people come back from prison and then they increase the risk of people who were not there. So I definitely want to ask about this. Like, so is this the first prison healthcare related thing that you're doing?
So the Beyond the Walls Prison Healthcare and Reentry Summit is the 10th one that we've done so far. So we're in the 10th year of this conference. It's the second biggest event of AIDS Education Month. It has about 650 people who come to it. Philadelphia Fight, we have a program called the Institute for Community Justice, which works directly with the Philadelphia prison systems to go into the prisons, connect with folks who are HIV positive on the inside, and then when they are released, connect them immediately to care, because it's that point at which folks get released that they can get very quickly lost to care. They don't know what to do. Some have been inside for a really long time. They don't know how to quite navigate the outside world yet. And so it's really important that they don't stop their treatment and stop their regimen, but stay connected to care and connected to a community that can not only help them with their health care, but can also help connect them to the other services that they may be in need of when reentering society. Just like you said, you know, folks are coming home from prison with a whole host of things that they, you know, don't quite even know how to navigate. And so that's really part of this summit, is to talk about sort of both health on the inside of prisons, physical health and well-being, how folks are treated for HIV, but also general health and wellness, mental health issues that are part of the prison system. And then again, when they come out, what we can all be doing as a community, whether it's a nonprofit organization like Philadelphia Fight, whether it's the parole and probation officers that we need to work with, or whether it's the medical facilities that folks are going to be accessing, all of these need to be coordinated with somebody's health and well-being so that when they do reenter, they don't actually go back to prison at some point. It's a very, very interesting conference that actually pulls together people who usually don't sit in a room, like correctional officers and ex-offenders, in the same room having a conversation about prison issues. Some of the really exciting workshops that we're having at this event, one is called Reproductive Health Locked Up. Another one is 10 years of HIV prevention in Philadelphia's juvenile justice system. So really talking about youth and HIV prevention for those who are locked up in the juvenile justice system. Working with sex offenders is another workshop that we're going to be talking about.
So some of these workshops, can you explain like a little bit more in depth what you'll specifically be learning in them?
So there are so many great workshops, but there are a couple that I'm happy to highlight. One of the ones that I think is going to be really powerful is called The Best and the Worst: Experiences of Inmates Living with HIV in the Philadelphia Prison System, Prison Health from Corrections to the Community. And it's really going to be a panel of the best and worst of HIV-positive inmate experiences in the Philadelphia prisons. And I think that it's going to be a very difficult workshop because people have really been through a lot. You know, if when you're in the prisons and you go and you get your meds, all the other inmates kind of know what's going on or want to know what's going on, and that can really put you at risk or at a disadvantage in other ways when dealing with your sort of co-inmates. So being confidential healthcare for HIV positive people in the prison systems is something that's really important. Another workshop that is going to be really interesting, and it gets a lot of debate every year, is called Shaping Community Response to the Current Climate of HIV Criminalization in the U.S. So there's a lot of instances where HIV-positive people get arrested and booked because it is found out that they are HIV-positive when doing sex work, for example, or sharing needles or that kind of thing. And there's a lot of laws. 36 states and territories have laws expressly to criminalize HIV exposure and or non-disclosure of HIV status for sexual contact. So if you are living with HIV and you did not feel comfortable to tell somebody that you were HIV-positive and you had sex with them, you could potentially be criminalized and put into jail for that one sex act in many places.
Does that include protected sex as well?
No, it does not include protected sex. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a highly emotional topic, but one that, you know, is incredibly important because it really can impact people's lives. And there's a lot of reasons why somebody would not want to disclose. It may be a physical threat of violence reason. It may be that they are terrified of what somebody will say or think, and there's like an emotional reason why that doesn't happen. And so it's a very, very difficult topic. So those are just two that I wanted to point out that should be incredibly interesting at the Prison Healthcare and Reentry Summit. Again, that summit's on June 19th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. It's in the old part of the Convention Center, so it's at 12th and Arch Street, and it's all day, 8:30 a.m. until 5 p.m.
I'm stoked for that, and I want to ask a little bit more about that last criminalization workshop, because I've had conversations with people, and I've heard conversations people have where they are supportive of this type of criminalization, because from one vantage, it looks like one person is putting the other person at risk through negligence, and it gets compared to something like drunk driving, or it gets compared to some other kind of activity like that. But what I think it should be used to highlight is our individual responsibility to protect ourselves. Because if you're having unprotected sex with a person and you're not asking their status, or you're not just taking the initiative to make sure that the sex is protected, two, tango, etc., yada, yada. So, I mean, you can have the position that these people are doing something that is wrong. That's fine. You can look at it and say that that's a thing that people should be forthright with their status when they're sexually active with someone. But again, like, we are ultimately responsible for our own sexual decisions. So, sounds like a fascinating, fascinating conversation. And I'm imagining it's going to get a little bit heated. Do you think that that's a possibility?
It's always a possibility. I think that it is an emotional topic, and we have had conversations in the past that have certainly got heated. But I think you literally hit the nail on the head with what you said. I mean, there is, everybody going into a sexual encounter should be aware of protecting themselves. But at the same time, you could understand how upset somebody could be if somebody knew their HIV status and did not disclose it. I would also just add that it's really important that, you know, when you're not in somebody's shoes, it's incredibly hard to know what you would do in that situation, even if you think that you would do one thing. So it should be a really good conversation. We have great people on the panel, and it is an issue that, you know, can really, there is nothing good that comes out, really, of incarcerating people. You know, going to prison does not save people's lives. It makes their lives significantly harder. And so, especially when you're talking about sick people, where if they're not getting proper care in prison, what you're really doing is giving them a death sentence. You're really even talking about it in a whole other set of issues that come along with this. So it should be a very, very good conversation. And again, there's 28 or more other workshops happening that day as well, and a very exciting closing panel. That closing plenary is called What is Ban the Box? And you may have seen some news reports about it recently. Ban the Box is really talking about when you go to a job application, whether or not your employers are allowed to have you check off whether you've been incarcerated or not, and can use that against you for whether they hire you. And again, this is a really heated topic as well. And so our closing plenary will be talking about, you know, ban the box and what it means. And so it should, again, be a very exciting closing plenary. The next event that I want to mention is called Movements for Change. So Movements for Change is going to be held on June 21st, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. It's going to be at the Friends Center. This event started a few years ago in honor of Kiyoshi Kurumiya, who was a civil rights gay rights HIV activist who died of HIV complication, AIDS-related complications in 2000. He was kind of a titan in this city in terms of the work and the activism that he did. And so this is really our activist-oriented event. And this year, because it's so timely, we're really going to be talking about the Occupy movements, healthcare, and ACT UP, and having a conversation between these activist movements to really move forward on making sure that people have a right to their healthcare, making sure that they have access to medication, and making sure that we are organizing in a way that's going to be effective in the future, both learning lessons from ACT UP's history, which did incredible demonstrations in the 80s and 90s, and even in today is still very, very active globally, and building on the momentum for the Occupy Wall Street movements.
So is this largely a meeting for people who consider themselves activists?
It's a meeting for anybody who wants to get involved and take direct action or learn how to get involved or feel like they want to be part of these movements, or for folks who've been part of maybe ACT UP movements in the past and want to lend their voice to the current discussions. The next event, again, this is going to be a really fun event, is called the Legendary Crystal Ball. And that's going to be held on June 23rd at the University of the Arts Hamilton Hall. It's an evening event from 7 p.m. and it will end when it ends. But the Crystal Ball is a major an event in the ballroom community where the ballroom houses compete for prizes, and there are incredible performances that are done at this event. We usually have about 600 people who come out to it. If you've ever seen, you know, this is like new style voguing in a way that you have never seen it. It is like pretty amazing and fabulous. People really work hard on developing their whole personas and their outfits. And they're just these incredible, incredible, catwalk performances that people do.
If you need a refresher, you need to go Netflix, Paris is Burning. Do your homework, kids. Find out about balls.
Paris is Burning is a phenomenal, perfect thing. And we have it in the AIDS library. You can rent it out from us. So you can always come visit us if you don't know where to get it. So come on out to that event. The next event is we are working with the Wilma Theater actually this year because fortuitously the Wilma is showing Angels in America, which is an award-winning play by Tony Kushner that came out in the early 90s. And if there was a play that captured really what was going on in those early years, particularly in New York City, it is this play. It is an incredibly emotional and incredibly important play that came out, like I said, in the early 90s. And so all during the month of June, you can get tickets at the Wilma and go see this play. And then on the 25th of June, we're actually going to have a kind of State of HIV and AIDS in Philadelphia panel at the Wilma Theater, where you can hear a little bit more about what is going on right now today. The June 27th, as I mentioned way earlier, is National HIV Testing Day. And all I can say is get tested, find out your status, you know, get treated, because that is a way to live a long and healthy life. And we're going to be doing testing throughout the city. There's several agencies who've joined together, ActionAIDS, Mazzoni Center, St. Christopher's Hospital, and Philadelphia Fight, and we're going to be in Galay. We're all going to be doing testing, and you can, again, if you get tested, you can get entered into a raffle and win a large flat screen TV and a whole variety of other smaller prizes as well.
If you weren't already motivated, flat screen TV.
I totally need one for my home as well, so I am very excited about this. And the last event of the month is on June 30th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., it's our community cookout. And this is just a super fun grill fest where we barbecue and we have people come out There's always a karaoke and a DJ and people line dance and they tell personal stories, and it's just a really nice kind of end of the month event. We always have it up at around 33rd and Cecil B. Moore on that part of Fairmount Park, and folks can just come on by and, you know, just enjoy what is usually a beautiful June afternoon. The other thing that I would say is that you can get tested, of course, anytime during the month, but FITE is actually opened late nights every Wednesday of this month. So you can come in and get tested from 9 p.m. till 1 a.m. We're going to be open and we're going to be here if you want to get tested during that time.
So we just went over a whole lot of different events. So, okay, if somebody was listening to this podcast but wasn't able to, like, write those down, where can we get the calendar? Where can we find out more about all the stuff that FITE is doing?
So you can go to our website, www.fite.org/AEM, as in Mary, and you can find out information about all the events on our website for AIDS Education Month. AEM for short. You can also just call us and we'll send you out information. You can reach us at 215-985-4448. You can email us at AEM, as in Mary, at fite.org and get information that way through our email. We actually have a whole bunch of flyers and posters on subways and in subway shelters and in bus shelters. So you can actually walk down the street and be like, oh, what's going on today? You can get information that way as well.
So FITE outside of June is also doing lots of good work. Like, I am impressed with its existence the other 11 months. What else are you up to?
So FITE is known as a comprehensive AIDS service organization, which basically means that we're a one-stop shop. So we do everything. We have our Jonathan Lacks Treatment Center, which is a clinic specifically for people living with HIV, where they can both get care for their HIV and also just regular primary care. So they only have to go to one doctor. And so they can come to the clinic and they can get case management services. They can get mental health services through our Diana Baldwin Clinic and see a therapist. They can get treatment for hepatitis as well, because a lot of people living with HIV are also co-infected with hepatitis C. So we have a complete, medical clinic at our site that we, 12 months out of the year, we see over 1,500 patients. We also have, in the education department, which is my department, we have a number of other programs for both people living with HIV and people who are negative for HIV, but maybe at high risk. So our signature program, and the thing that I, think is one of the most important things that we do, is called Project Teach. We've been doing Project Teach for probably about 15 years at this point. Project Teach is an 8-week class for people living with HIV. It teaches you everything that you need to know about how to live with and manage your disease. It meets twice a week. We're having an evening class in the summer for the first time in many years. So if you work full-time, you can take the evening class. And it really, folks who come into this class often very frequently feel like they're going to die. They feel like they don't know what's going on. They haven't dealt with the fact that they're, been diagnosed with HIV. And they come out of the class having a better sense of exactly what's going on in their body, knowing what to ask and talk to their providers about, and, really wanting to actually teach back and teach the community around them about HIV and to destigmatize it. It's very important class that we do. We also do a shorter version of that class called Teach Outside for folks who are HIV positive, but who are also have a history of incarceration, that talks a little bit more about reentry and services for folks on the outside. We have a Latino Teach class that's taught in Spanish, specifically to make sure we're reaching the Spanish-speaking population, again, for HIV positive people who primary language is Spanish. And we have a class called Frontline Teach, which is taught both online and face-to-face, and it's really for HIV-negative folks, so who may want to learn more or may want to support family members, or who may be in the field in some way. They're working at a shelter, they're working in a recovery house, and who need to know a little bit more about HIV to better serve the folks that they're working with. We also have, I think you heard me mention, the AIDS Library, which was founded in 1987, so we are 25 years old at this point. And the AIDS Library is a collection, obviously, of books and videos, DVDs that you can borrow, or you can just come in, you can ask our reference librarian a whole bunch of questions in a space where people will not stigmatize you for asking those really sort of hard questions. And we help students all the time for research. We work with folks, case managers, for better services. And we publish annually our HIV and AIDS Metropolitan Resource Guide, which has over 700 listings in the Philadelphia greater region for HIV information and organizations. So we do a lot of work around collecting and pushing out other information and resources that people may need to know about. Another project that we have is the Critical Path Project, which was recently awarded with federal broadband stimulus funding. And the goal of the Critical Path Project is to really make sure folks have internet access and know how to use the internet, because HIV treatment information, you're going to find it first, the latest information on the internet. So it's really important that folks can have access to that information as quickly as possible, because it's life-saving information. So we actually have 27 public computing centers that we are managing around the city in a partnership with the City of Philadelphia and the Urban Affairs Coalition, that's managing overall 77 public computer centers. And we're doing all sorts of digital literacy classes with the general population. Anybody who wants to learn about how to use a computer, who wants to learn how to do digital storytelling, who wants to learn how to do a blog, Excel, Word, all of those things the Critical Path Project is working on. The last program that I want to mention is the Youth Health Empowerment Project, which also known as YHEP, which is really our youth focused program. And they predominantly work with HIV negative youth, although they do see some youth who are HIV positive. But they go in the schools. So if you are a teacher or you know somebody who needs some sex education and their school is not providing it, YHEP can always come out to your school and provide you with that program. We do the Dance for Life program both in the schools, or we can just do a simple workshop in a classroom. YHEP has a drop-in center and really serves a lot of homeless youth, youth who don't have any place to go, youth who may be doing sex work, youth who may be active drug using. So we see a very vulnerable youth population, but at our drop-in center, young people can get showers, they can do their laundry if they don't have any other place to do it. We have food every day at our drop-in center, and we have a number of programs that are both fun, like our dance class, and that are educational that we do at YHEP as well. We also have trauma therapy there, so folks can get linked to a trauma therapist, or they can talk about kind of some of the things that have been going on in their lives. And unfortunately, almost all of the youth that we see have had experienced extreme trauma. So YHEP does an amazing job of reaching, you know, a wide variety of young people, both really vulnerable young people and young people who are in schools, who are doing well, but who still may be putting themselves at risk and don't even know it, because today they're not getting the sex education that they really need. And then the last program that I didn't talk about is the Institute for Community Justice, which is at 21 South 12th Street, and it's on the 7th floor, and it's really our prison services department at Philadelphia Fight, again, working with folks who've been incarcerated, both those who are HIV negative and HIV positive, and those who have been incarcerated and are now on the outside, their family members and their community at large, doing a lot of prison advocacy work, doing a lot of reentry work, doing job skills and, you know, getting people connected to workforce development. So doing a whole range of programming for folks who've been incarcerated.
Wow. Sounds like you have a lot of free time.
Not so much, especially not in June.
So I'm like listening to this, and I'm like, every time there's one of those conversations, they're like, there needs to be a program. And you have a program. It is covered. Philadelphia Fight has every corner, every nook and cranny. That is impressive as hell. I can't even. How did you get into this field and into this particular occupation?
So I say that it was really by luck. I mean, I, you know, grew up in an era when I was very lucky. I mean, you know, I was very young when HIV and AIDS first kind of hit the public conscience in the 80s. You know, I was a child and actually had very good sex education at a time when people were really, there was a huge motivation to have good comprehensive sex education in the schools. So I feel very lucky that I was able to have that. I really, you know, as I got older and got involved, I got a job at Fight and really saw how there has been really an assault on getting people accurate information in our country. And that includes in the schools, it includes, you know, incarcerating folks. It includes not talking about HIV and AIDS anymore in a lot of cases. I mean, we talk about it all the time, but I can't tell you how many people tell me, I haven't really heard that much about it recently. You know, but it is a disease that if we put our heads to, we can absolutely end the epidemic. And that's part of our, you know, philosophy for this year during AIDS Education Month, that it is about political will. And I think that once I got involved in sort of the work with HIV, it really intersects with a lot of other social issues that we have got to address if we're going to end the epidemic. We've got to address incarceration rates. We've got to address education, which has been slashed in this city tremendously just by this recent budget from the state. And so these are things that impact the HIV epidemic. Poverty impacts the HIV epidemic. So if we don't talk about the intersection of all of these things, you know, we're not doing justice. We're leaving people out. We're not going to be ending the epidemic. So I think that's what inspires me to work in this field, because it's, you know, it's not just about HIV. It's about working with people to make sure that their needs are met so that they can, you know, make good choices, that they have access to condoms, that they, you know where to go when they're sick, that they aren't stigmatized or kicked out of their homes for living with HIV. All of those things impact the epidemic. And I mean, at the end of the day, that's why I'm here.
So I just want to thank Juliet Fink, Director of Education at Philadelphia Fight, general superhero, yet not wearing a cape. You'd be surprised. She's like undercover. She's stealth right now. No capes. Maybe there's some boots hidden somewhere that have like rocket launchers on the back of them, something like that. Okay, so yeah, this is awesome. I was just sitting here like, oh, swoon the whole time. So thank you so much to Juliet Fink, Director of Education at Philadelphia Fight. You heard a lot of information, and in there you heard how to find out. So just a quick reminder, folks, of your website.
www.fight.org/AEM.
And so in the month of June, if you have any free time, and I know you have some free time because you're listening to this, go to one of these things. These are going to be awesome things. So again, thank you very much, Juliet, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And everyone, have a good day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmare@gmail.com. And thank you.